There's no free lunch when it comes to investing. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast with Greg and Colin today.
Hey.
Hey. Greg, I got to tell you, my energy is a little low today.
Is it? Well, yeah. You wouldn't have known from your intro.
No, but that intro was pretty lame.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I was helping my daughter with her economics last night.
Ouch.
Yeah. Well, I like economics.
Yeah.
Yeah, having to go back and redo first year university economics at 10 o'clock at night isn't the way I like to spend my 10 o'clock at night.
Not typically, no.
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 No, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about a potpourri of sorts, right?
Right.
So I guess some people say, what are the smart investors doing now?
Yep.
You hear that all the time.
Sure.
Which is just a bunch of bunk, by the way. But
well, yeah, smart investors as opposed to what, the rest of us?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we could actually have this be the shortest episode ever and say, well, the smart investors are doing what they did last week and last year and
exactly.
The year before that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Not changing anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is in the news all the time. And especially with the way the market is right now, the equity markets have been quite volatile on the upside.
Yes.
Interestingly enough, with a US government shutdown, the equity markets are still up.
Yeah. Why not? You know, and part of that is just expectations. You know, certainly there's a lot of good feelings, you know, maybe even euphoria or exuberance in the market right now, rational or irrational, who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's hard to find something that the market hasn't really reacted negatively to much since the Independence Day announcement of tariffs back in April. So right now...
Well, that was February.
Right, but remember...
Or
whatever they call it.
Yeah, I'm mixing up two things. Because I was up at late doing economics.
Exactly.
Is the problem. But
yeah.
Okay, but speaking of economics, central banks, of course, are wondering what to do with interest rates all the time.
Yep.
And we've had recently rate cuts in both Canada and the U.S.
Yep.
And the bigger question is, so what happens for the rest of the year? Will there be more rate cuts? Will it continue on into 2026? And so I guess what we wanted to do today was get our listeners to do some action plans.
Good idea. Yep.
So the first one is to write down your top three financial priorities for the next 12 months. That could be a mortgage renewal, TFSA contributions, opening up FHSAs.
Yep.
Just doing a general rebalancing.
For sure.
Right? Or maybe there's a big purchase in the next 12 months that you're planning for, right? And so we would invite investors to define success now instead of just chasing max return, right?
Right. Yeah,
and a lot of this comes back to the way we work with the people that we work with. You know, we obviously look at rates of return, but we also look at like goals-based planning, right?
Yep.
So which may or may not be impacted by what their short-term rate of return is.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So where do we start this?
Well, okay, so let's start with bonds and cash.
Yep.
So bonds and cash, you know, as we've spoken over the years, I mean, have a fairly significant role to play in the portfolio from the standpoint of providing return at a lower risk level overall than the equities in the portfolio. And so we expect everyone pretty much to have bonds and cash in their portfolio. Bonds anyway.
Yeah.
Cash, you know, dependent on what, you know, what needs might be upcoming. So just talking about the bond portfolio for a while. Very often people will, as they do their planning, they'll say, okay, well, we need some compartmentalization of things. So for example, operating cash. So, you know, we often tell people like, you want to make sure you've got a certain amount of money available and in case of emergency, in case you lose your job, in case the market has a really bad spell or whatever. And so we talk about how much, you know, what's the right amount of operating cash to have on hand. And it varies, you know, some people will say as little as 3 months of cash and others will say a year.
Right.
But I think, you know, the important thing is to pick an amount that you believe is you know, what you'd feel comfortable with and then have that money easily available, either in daily interest, treasury bills, short-term cash or short-term bonds, I should say, things like that.
Like money market.
Yes. Money market investments. Exactly. And what's money market? Pretty much anything that matures within under a year.
Yeah.
And it just means something that with very little volatility. And so if you had to grab the cash today, there's a very low chance that it would be at a bad time.
Yeah.
Then there's other near-term goals that that people may have. And as you mentioned earlier, maybe it's a major purchase that's being planned. Maybe it's upcoming retirement or something. It could be anything. Mm-hmm. But if there are some near-term goals, then you do want to make sure that you've got funds in a lower risk bond mutual fund. Mm-hmm. And when I say lower risk, just maybe something that has a lower than average duration. Mm-hmm. And we've talked in the past, what's duration? Well, it's just a measure of bonds volatility in response to, changing interest rates. Mm-hmm. And so if you are planning to make a purchase in the next couple of years, it's always nice to have funds available in bonds just because there's a lower chance that they would be down in value at the time that you needed the cash. Mm-hmm. So I think important to sort of look at that and have funds that you can sell with very low chance of downside risk or downside volatility. Now, the other thing to keep in mind, though, is if you do plan to use cash or bonds, shorter duration bonds, to fund purchases or to fund emergency spending, then, of course, your asset allocation is going to change. Mm-hmm. So if you've got, let's for argument's sake, a 50-50 mix of stocks and bonds, and you start pulling out larger amounts of bonds for major purchases, that's going to increase your weighting towards stocks. And so you will need to plan a rebalance, whether it's an immediate rebalance or a rebalance that's kind of spread out over a number of months or, a year or something like that.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, and then certainly any core fixed income that you hold in the portfolio is intended as long-term investments, strictly as part of the overall investment strategy, and bonds are looked at to do their job, which is to provide income at a lower overall volatility level than stocks.
Sure.
So bonds and cash.
Bonds and cash. Well, yep. I mean, we all need them, as you say, right? And the bond market is so much bigger than the world equity market.
It is.
And people never talk about it.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
But we find it fascinating.
For sure.
Okay, well, let's talk about equities for a minute then, because equities, of course, that we're in a bull market in the U.S. for sure, and in Canada, pretty much every equity market is in a bull market these days globally, right? Mm-hmm. And so I guess the question is, and I had this the other day, should we be investing in the market right now because it's at an all-time high?
Yep.
And, I said to that person, well, milk production is also at an all-time high, so I'm not sure what that means, right?
Right.
But the other point of it was that, going back to our first comments about interest rates, if we are in this rate cut cycle, then the price of bonds is going to go up, right? Mm-hmm. But the price of stocks probably is going to go up too, because the borrowing costs of those companies comes down.
Yes.
And so they become more profitable.
Absolutely.
So they have better cash flow.
Right on.
And their stocks are priced based off of their future cash flow expectations.
Right on.
Not current, right?
Exactly.
So we're pretty optimistic in the equity market right now. So I would say the smart investors are staying invested in equities.
Yep.
And also possibly adding to equities, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe revisiting that asset allocation you talked about, and some maybe have realized maybe they've been a little bit more conservative than they need to be.
Yep.
Maybe they've got a big pension that's going to fund their day-to-day expenses. And so they're not taking a ton of more risk in the equity market, but just adjusting that asset allocation.
For sure.
Yeah, and then I guess the other part to that is that there's still this desire from some to pick the odd stock here and there, right? Yep. And we don't have anything against that.
Not at all.
Like, I think we talked maybe last time or the time before about how, like, hey, stock picking's fun, right? Or it can be.
It can be. That's right. Right? When it works.
When it works.
Yeah.
All we would caution those investors is just keep it to a reasonable amount, right?
Yeah.
So if you have a cowboy account, you want to keep that to maybe 5% or less of your overall asset allocation. And as you mentioned in your bond discussion, you're going to have to rebalance. And so in our model portfolios, we rebalance those equities quarterly. So you need to come up with some sort of rebalancing schedule.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or a target weight schedule. So
for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And then lastly, on equities, there is a big emphasis on dividends in the world. And, dividends, I would say focus on total returns.
Yeah.
Right? Rather than just dividends, because Dividends are a form of return of capital.
Sure it is.
Yeah.
Or sure they are, I should say.
Yeah.
And and a company's dividend policy does not change the outlook for that company. And so when you look at total return, you know, many companies pay dividends, but what you care about is over the course of a year, what was my total return, which is dividends plus capital appreciation. Mm-hmm. And that's really what's important. Mm-hmm. So for people that are focusing too much on dividends, they might be missing opportunities among companies that don't pay dividends, but are extremely fast growing companies like most tech companies,
right,
in the beginning of their life cycles.
Well, even markets, you know, so I was talking to somebody the other day and they said, well, you know, I've got this fund in my TFSA. How's it doing? I said, well, it's up, I don't know, 16% over the last year.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good. I said, yeah. And she said, well, what's the dividend?
Yeah.
I said, well, it's 1.8%.
Yeah.
She said, well, that's not very good.
Right.
And I was like, well, what do you care? Like it's, yeah, you're up 16%.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that includes the 1.8, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and it's a matter of just focusing on the return.
Yeah.
You know, the dividend is as I say, it's just a decision that the company makes, mm-hmm, you know, and they make it, you know, based on what some investors' expectations are. Mm-hmm. But if they didn't make the dividend payment, they would just keep the money and reinvest it into future growth.
Right. So what I think I hear you saying is that the smart money, as the experts say, is kind of just rebalance and stay the course.
And focus on total return. Yeah. Exactly. All right, well, let's move on to things that affect most people, and that's mortgages and housing. So for most people, if the mortgage renewal is coming up within the next 6 to 12 months, now is the time to start working on the renewal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and many, many banks or financial institutions will give you a rate hold, you know, so if you decide that you want to, you will remortgage your house or extend the mortgage, whatever, you need to make a decision on what kind of mortgage you want to take. And so there's going to be decisions like fixed versus variable. If you have a limited cash flow or a very strict cash flow, then you might want to look towards fixed, you know, mortgage payments, because then at least you know you have certainty what those payments will be, and you won't be surprised if interest rates go up and therefore your mortgage payments go up. You know, if you have a stronger buffer and some flexibility, you might consider variable rate mortgages because they give you the opportunity to prepay, mm-hmm, without penalty, typically. And obviously, if interest rates do go down, then you'll benefit from that.
Well, and everybody that is whose mortgage is coming due now probably is coming out of a pretty low interest rate mortgage.
Yes, it could be, right? For sure. Like, yeah.
Somewhere in the 1-3% range.
Yeah.
And so you're not getting a 2% mortgage at renewal right now, right?
Yep.
Because interest rates are just higher.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, exactly. So we've talked about, you know, getting a rate hold just so you've, you know, got the ability to lock in a rate now. Mm-hmm. If things change, you need to consider fixed versus variable mortgage. You also need to look at penalty math, mm-hmm, which is like, what is the penalty for, you know, for getting out of the mortgage?
Yeah, breaking the term.
Yep. And there's two things to look at. The IRD, which is?
The interest rate differential.
Right. Okay. The IRD, so the interest rate differential between, you know, the current rate and what a new rate would be on refinancing, mm-hmm, versus a three-month interest penalty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just important to know that up front. There are going to be penalties if you want to break your mortgage or early.
Yeah.
And you want to understand what those numbers are and whether it makes sense.
Well, and I've had to break a mortgage in the past. It's, mm-hmm, not because it was planned, but,
right,
you know, we sold a house and bought a new one and it meant you're breaking the term.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course.
And so the bank will charge you whatever's in the favor of the bank.
Yes.
So, because you know, I think we've said it a few times on our show, like the bank is not a charity, right?
That's right.
They're focuses on creating shareholder value.
Right. And for anybody that has owned bank stocks directly,
yeah,
they're probably happy about that.
Well, unless they have a mortgage.
Unless they have a mortgage. So,
yeah.
So you're saying, are you saying then if you have a mortgage, you should own the shares of the bank that holds the mortgage as well?
I'm not saying that. You're saying that.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Well, there I said it. Also look at prepayment privileges because typically, most fixed term mortgages do allow up, you know, a 15% annual prepayment. Mm-hmm. And so if you do have cash available, you can significantly reduce future interest costs by making a 15% prepayment, you know, once a year, if those funds are available.
Yeah, and this is just the inverse power of compounding.
That's right.
Right? So the more you pay off now, the less you pay off later.
Exactly. And again, like we were talking earlier, you know, you might want to make sure you've got an emergency buffer, because if something does happen, if you lose mm-hmm. your job, you're not able to pay the mortgage, bad things happen. Mm-hmm. And so there are certain expenses that might be able to be deferred, but mortgage payments are not one of them.
Yeah. Well, even not even losing your job, but remember, like in March of 2020, this just came up last night when I was helping my daughter with her economics, because she was talking about what was the supply chain disruption that happened in 2022 globally. Yeah.
Okay.
And I said, well, that happened in March of 2020 when the world literally shut down and stopped making everything for a period of time.
Right.
And it affected the whole supply chain. If you didn't have access to funds, and you're in that period of time where the equity market was down 35%, the bond market was down, I don't know, 20% or something.
Yep.
I mean, for a short period of time. Mm-hmm. But if you needed money at that time,
yeah,
you're kind of hooped.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, for sure. And so in terms of, you know, ways to take action, if you are in that position of looking to renew a mortgage in the next 6 to 12 months, good idea just to price out a couple of options, you know, mm-hmm. maybe two fixed term options, a variable option, and then look at what would happen to the payments if interest rates rose 1%. Mm-hmm. You can look at what would happen if they declined 1%, but you know, mm-hmm. that would be good news, but make sure that if the interest rates did rise 1%, that you're still able to make the payments and, you know, keep your finances on track.
For sure. For sure.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's get into tax, because are we in the last quarter of the year? We're in the last quarter of the year.
We absolutely are.
Yeah. So this is a time when people are starting to get ready for, gathering all of their slips,
yep.
for next year and doing any action steps now. And there is a saying, small repeatable tax decisions add up more than one big bet.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good saying.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so the way we would look at it is like, you know, in the last probably 60 days of the year, you want to look at tax loss harvesting.
Yep.
Right. So selling some losers to crystallize capital gains mm-hmm. That you could use against crystallized capital losses.
That's right.
That you could use against some other capital gains that you might have. The only thing you want to be careful of is this 30-day superficial loss rule. If you do sell something for tax reasons to crystallize a loss, you've got to wait at least 30 days to repurchase it, or you don't get to use that loss.
That's right. And so what a lot of people will do is they'll buy similar but not identical investments.
Yeah.
And that way you're sort of still participating in whatever upside might be ahead, but at least you get to claim the loss. So yeah, absolutely important to understand those rules about the superficial loss.
For sure. Other things to consider: your tax-free savings account. Have you made a contribution this year? Do you have unused room? I would caution people to be careful on this one, because people will come to us and say, hey, I think I have $7,000 of TFSA room.
Yep.
And we don't actually know, right?
That's right.
So we always say, well, you should go check with CRA and mm-hmm. just double check. The problem is there's like a information gap there.
That's right.
Right? And so they might go check their online and it says, yes, you have $7,000 of contribution room.
Yep.
They fund it, and then 6 months later, they're given an interest penalty for being over-contributed for 6 months.
Yep.
So that's that. People really got to be careful that one.
That's right, because and the reason for that is because the CRA's information is always last year's.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you look at your notice of assessment that you get back after you file your taxes in April, it'll show you that you have $7,000 a room available, but you may have already made that contribution in January.
Yeah.
Yeah, but CRA is not aware of that because they don't find out until the end of this year.
Yeah.
So yeah, so absolutely critical to sort of keep track of the actual contributions and not necessarily mm-hmm. take CRA's word for it.
Yeah, and make sure you're not over contributing to your RRSP.
Right.
If you've got a company plan that's collecting monthly or something, mm-hmm. just be aware of that. And the last part in that area would be first home savings accounts.
Yeah.
So if you have somebody that you're, if it's you or one of your loved ones, and you're wanting to set up a first home savings account, you got to do that before December 31st.
Yep.
So that you get the $8,000 contribution room for 2025. Mm-hmm. Right. Because if you wait till January 1st, well, firstly, we're not open on January 1st, so you'll have to call us on January 2nd.
Right.
So that. But also, you will have missed 2025's contribution room.
That's right.
So that's really important. And then, of course, like from an asset location stance, like you talked about asset allocation earlier.
Yep.
But asset location, I mean, make sure that you've got your highest expected return equities in your TFSA so that you're getting like tax-free growth forever.
Yep.
Make sure you have your interest-bearing bonds in things like your RRSP.
Yep.
So you're not paying tax on the income that's being generated. And then holding, you know, everything else in between in the non-registered account, taking advantage of the dividend tax credit scheme. I always hate that. Dividend tax credit scheme.
Yeah.
Why do they put the word scheme in there?
It makes it sound kind of shady.
It does, right? Like if I went home and said to my wife that I've got a new house purchase scheme.
Yeah.
She'd question what the heck I was talking about, right?
Yeah. It doesn't sound legit.
No. And lastly, for business owners who may be looking at exiting a business, you're going to want to start planning that a potential sale 12 to 24 months out and having your share structure reviewed, all your payroll rules viewed.
Best to have that nailed down well in advance, because trying to correct it after the fact is really difficult. Okay, let's move on to what we'll call retirement income and sleep at night planning.
Sure.
So having retired just this past year.
Are you sleeping at night?
Generally.
Yeah, good for you.
And if I'm not sleeping at night, it's not because of my retirement planning.
Okay.
Something else. So just as we had been talking earlier with regards to, you know, the need for cash and short-term bonds, you do want to have 12 to 24 months of planned withdrawals available to you. And so whether it's in cash or short-term bonds and things like that, you now depend on that money for your, you know, for your cash flow. Mm-hmm. And you want to make sure, like any employee who's getting a paycheck, you want to make sure those paychecks come in for the next 12 to 24 months, regardless of what's happening in the market.
Sure.
So you definitely want to have some withdrawal, you know, the withdrawals planned and available, you know, and that's going to tie into when you have, you know, your bond funds, which, you know, by definition, most bond funds will have a ladder built into them. So they'll have bonds maturing at different times and they'll be generating income for you. A good way to ensure that money's available to you in cash is to set up automatic monthly redemptions, because that can be set up very easily. We call them systematic withdrawal plans in the business.
Yep.
But it's just a way to automatically have a certain dollar amount of funds sold. And I think the other thing, though, that a lot of people don't think of, but over the years I've learned it's incredibly important, is to not only take money out of the bond funds. You know, so if you're looking for monthly cash flow and you want to maintain the asset allocation that you've got, it makes a whole lot of sense to redeem equity funds as well.
Sure.
Not just bond funds, because most years stocks are going up. Mm-hmm. And when you redeem those stocks through systematic withdrawals, it's very tax efficient. You know, if you've had a 10% return this year on your stocks, but you're only redeeming 2% of your stock holdings, the actual capital gain tax you'll pay on that redemption is extremely low, far lower than the interest you'll pay on bond, you know, income from bonds.
Sure.
And so you want to look at the total return and try to use both stocks and bonds to provide your cash flow for, you know, for monthly spending, you know, and everything else, you know, things like whatever your CPP or OAS payments are, those pretty much, you know, remain the same, you know, those are guaranteed by the government, you know, unless you're subject to possibly to some OAS clawback. But for the most part, you can look at those income, you know, the income from those types of things and build that into the planning. And by doing that, you know, if you can comfortably identify where your cash flow is coming from every month, that is a very comforting way to live.
Well, for sure. You're smoothing it out.
Yep.
Right?
Right.
And,
on.
You know, everybody that complains to me about getting their OAS clawed back 100%, I feel like giving them a high five.
Yeah.
And saying, well, I think you're doing pretty well.
Yeah. Making over $133,000 a year.
Yeah. In retirement. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. So that's, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
But it's a behavioral item, right?
Yeah.
And so the thing with behaviors is that we all have them, right? We all have these behavioral items. And I remember there was a guy named, his name Jason Zweig?
Zweig. Yeah.
He wrote for the Wall Street Journal or something?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. Yep. And he wrote a book, and in it he said, your brain reacts to financial loss the same way as it does to mortal danger.
Yeah.
So I just want to prepare people for what will come, because we've been in this bull market for quite a while now, right?
Yep.
And at some point, the market will sell off for some reason. We don't know what it is yet. Yep. We just know that it'll happen, right? And so I think people should sort of pre-commit to what they're going to do.
Right, good idea. Right?
So yep. They can write down, if my portfolio falls X percent, I will rebalance, not sell. Now, for some people, that might be 10%. Mm-hmm. Some people might be 20%. Some people might be 30%. Whatever that number is in your comfort level, I think the important thing is not to sell out, but to rebalance that asset allocation. And to do that, you can have a decision diary. So before making any big move, I guess you got to answer yourself, what would change my mind? And what evidence would disconfirm this?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Those are big ones.
They are.
Because we've seen it too many times, you know, because the market is cyclical. There's cyclicality, as I like to say, right?
Yes.
So things are up right now. Mm-hmm. Guess what? They're going to go down at some point. And then guess what? They're going to go back up, right?
Well, and you know, and the perfect example of that, I think, is back in 2020 when the COVID pandemic started. Because, of course, that was wildly dramatic. And there may have been people that said, okay, well, 35% drawdown on stocks, that's way too much for me. Or they might have said, well, I was prepared for that because I've got a balanced portfolio. So overall, I might only be down 20%. Mm-hmm. But hey, this is a pandemic. This hasn't happened in our lifetimes and we better get out.
Yeah.
And of course, that decision we now know would have been wrong because the market closed up that year. But it is good to be able to write down, well, how do I think I would react?
Well, I know how we would react.
Yeah.
Because we reacted this way in 2020. We did a rebalancing trade for our discretionary portfolios.
Yeah.
Purchasing stocks when they were down 35%.
Exactly.
That was not because you and I are smarter than anybody else.
No.
It was just, you know what? That's what the investment policy statement said for a bandwidth.
That's right.
And we followed the rules.
Exactly. I mean, stocks could have gone down. They went down 50% during the global financial crisis.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a guarantee that they were going up. It just so happened, as you say, that it was a big enough adjustment that it threw people's investment policy statements off track. Mm-hmm.
So I think if you're faced with that big decision, for whatever reason, you know what, it kind of reminds me of when you get sort of a nasty email.
Yeah.
You probably have never had a nasty email in your life.
No, I think
you're too nice of a guy.
No, I've had a few.
but you get that nasty email. And what do you want to do? You want to reply in the moment.
Yep.
Right? And we've always talked about, you know what, take 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Just sit on it for 24 hours.
Yep.
24 hours from now, it's not going to be as big a deal as it was in the moment, right? Yep. So I think it's kind of the same thing with your portfolio.
Yep, agreed.
You know, like, don't sell it all out. You don't want to think about that for 24 hours.
For sure.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
My last topic is just risk management. And this is, you know, to me, it's an easy one. You know, risk management is something that you negotiate and agree upon with your advisor, to your point on behavior. You know, that's just an agreement that you say, okay, well, this asset mix that I've chosen, call it 50-50 just for argument's sake, is one that I'm comfortable with. I know it's behaved in a certain way in the past because we have that information. I have no idea exactly how it's going to perform in the future, mm-hmm. but I've got a good balance that I'm comfortable with. And that's all you need, you know, because there are no guarantees. We know that stocks are riskier than bonds, you know, and have a higher expected return, but that return is not a guarantee. We know bonds are less risky than stocks, have a lower expected return, still not a guarantee, but lower volatility. So we know things from history, and by just using what we know to build a portfolio, that takes care of the risk management side, you know, all by itself.
Sure.
You don't need to do anything more, as long as you're properly diversified.
So that's what the smart money's doing?
Exactly.
Well, let's just wrap up, because we are going to run out of time, with the action checklist for anybody that has made it this far into the program. Firstly, you know what, maybe moving from ultra short cash to intermediate core bonds is not a bad thing.
No, you know, if you don't have a specific need or use for the cash in the next 6 to 12 months, why would you deliberately take a lower return?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, keeping investment grade credit modest and diversified, that makes sense.
Okay, right? And so what you're talking about there is corporate bonds rather than maybe government bonds.
Yeah.
And also, you know, and making sure that you've got a well-diversified portfolio of those bonds. Yep.
Again, that's what the smart money's doing.
There you go.
Staying diversified, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want to rebalance our equities and fixed income periodically,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And you mentioned the mortgage renewal. If you've got one coming up, no harm in going to shop the rate now.
That's right.
Right? Yep. What's the worst thing they're going to say is you got to come back in a month and then negotiate it or yep. whatever, right?
For sure. One other comment just on the equity side of things is remember to be, when we talk about diversification, we're also talking about making sure that you have exposure to small cap stocks and value stocks, because mm-hmm. All of the action, it seems, or all of the news about the action has been about tech stocks, you know, or the Mag 7. Mm-hmm. And those are not small cap and they're not value. Mm-hmm. These are high growth, you know, mega cap stocks, and they've done very nicely, but it's not guaranteed that they'll do nicely mm-hmm. all the time. And there's a lot of history that proves that having exposure to small companies and to value stocks can also be highly, you know, highly rewarding over time.
And we would recommend doing that by way of buying something broadly diversified.
Exactly.
We want to confirm our top-up room for TFSAs, FHSAs, RSPs, and harvest those tax losses mindfully.
Right on.
For retirees, what are we doing?
Well, we're going to keep, you know, 12 to 24 months of runway, you know, making sure that you've got either short-term, you know, bonds or T-bills, or just planning to, you know, utilize through systematic withdrawals the funds you need to, you mm-hmm. know, to meet your expenses.
So maybe you got to do a budget.
Good idea.
Yeah.
And lastly, we want to make sure that you're reviewing your investment policy statement, taking advantage of opportunities to rebalance the portfolio, working with your advisor. I'm sure the advisors will sort of be reviewing portfolios and, mm-hmm. and recommending rebalancing on whatever either predetermined schedule mm-hmm. or when the bands move off their targeted allocation by a certain percentage.
For sure. Yep. Right on. Well, that's about it. That's our potpourri of things.
Okay, well, until next time then.
Till next time.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas Wealth is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals and do not represent the opinion of Q Wealth as a firm.